Thank you very much. I want to say a big howdy to everybody that's on our website. I started to say this morning, but it's not. Also, welcome all of our guests and good afternoon, congregation. You might want to turn your cell phones off. Well, I've got a question for you. How many of you have actually seen an angel? I have one hand, two hands. Would you say that they appear in human form, or you think they do? So what do they really look like? These angels that you've seen, what do they really look like? Now, I've seen angels too. I'm going to lower this a little. The angels I've seen or saw, they were kind of feminine. They had long white robes and long white wings. And they were in movies. And of course, you know, you can get these Valentines with angels on them, Christmas cards. But them's fake angels, them's not real. I have seen them in the movies, like I said. Also, I've seen little baby angels too. You know, they just float around here with them bows and arrows, and they shoot darts at people or arrows. Them's fake also. They're not real. So if you want a topic today, do angels appear in human form? That's my topic today. So can you say 100% that you have truly seen an angel? 100%. Other than, like I said, on Valentine's or Christmas cards, or maybe at the top of a Christmas tree. First, we need to distinguish their actual form and how they appear to us humans. How do they appear to us humans? Do they appear in a vision, or do they appear in person? And one thing you won't find in Scripture is that typical image of angels as winged people with halos, which I forgot to mention. Them angels I saw had halos. But you're not going to find that in the Bible. And them little guys, you know, playing harps and maybe sitting on the edge of a fluffy white cloud. What happens when that cloud dissipates? And I've seen a lot of them do it. Going to fall. And then it'd be fallen angels. I've heard that song. So when angels are seen in scriptures, they usually appear in the form of a human, usually, specifically as young men when they do appear. Usually adult males, never women, never a woman angel. And not really little children like that Cupid I was talking about. And this does not mean that these angels are truly male either. Just as they are not actually humans as in spirit. Some ask, can angels marry? So with that, I'd like to turn to Matthew 22. And I'm only going to read one scripture, Matthew 22, verse 30. Not Matthew 20, Matthew 22. Matthew 22, verse 30 says, For in the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like angels, angels of God in heaven. They never marry or given in marriage. So the answer, that's the answer to that question. Angels have no sexual desires, or they don't have any means of reproduction. They are referred to with masculine pronouns, he or him. But now, think about this, you know. There's a group of people, and you walk into the crowd of people, and there's men and women. What do you usually say? You usually say, well, hi, guys. Is that because you don't recognize the women? No. In the Bible, they do that, too. It's just a thing, you know. So angels appear as males when they do appear. So we all have spoken to a group of mixed male and female and maybe saying, hi, guys. And so angels are usually spoken to as masculine also. Now, do angels have wings? Well, I mentioned that I saw, you know, in angels with wings and halos. And what about angels having wings? What's interesting, when the Bible describes angels appearing to people in person, they're never described with wings. However, there are a few visions in which some angels are presented with wings. Now, we're going to go through that. If you turn to 1 Kings 6. We're going to read verse 23 through 28, 1 Kings 6. This first verse should tell you. Verse 23. Inside the inner sanctuary, he made two cherubims of olive wood, each 10 cubits high. He made them of olive wood. So that means that they're not real. They're carved angels. So, you know, you can do anything you want if you're carving or painting. Artists make beautiful paintings with angels, with big white wings, halos. Let's go on. One wing of the cherub was 5 cubits. The other wing of the cherub, 5 cubits. 10 cubits from the tip of one wing to the tip of the other. And the other cherub was 10 cubits. Both cherubims were of the same size and shape. The height of one cherubim was 10 cubits, and so was the other. Then he set the cherubims inside the inner room, and they stretched out the wings of the cherubim so that the wings of one touched one wall, and the wings of the other cherubim touched the other wall. And their wings touched each other in the middle of the room. Also, he overlaid them with gold. And the thing is here, you know, so we read about it. They're not real angels. They were made of olive wood. You know, he carved out of olive wood these angels. Not real. It's very possible that these carvings had more wings than two. They could have had more wings, but they might have been folded up. And the wings that were showing covered them, and you couldn't see them. So again, what do angels look like? And what does the Bible tell us? And are all angels alike? And many people assume a lot, you know, when it comes to the angelic realm. They carelessly base their beliefs on what they have always heard or what they think they see, other than in the movies and on the cards that I have described, or what artists put on canvas. We hear stories about guardian angels. I've heard a lot of them, stories about guardian angels. They're the angelic protection, like people being helped by angels in various ways. And you've heard stories, probably everybody in here has heard stories about protective angels. There are some right ideas among the various portrayals and descriptions, but also there are many misconceptions about angels. One of the most fascinating subjects of the Bible is that God's servant in the spirit realm, his messengers, and his heavenly armies. And that kind of brings me to, I didn't go to the scripture, but I was thinking about, remember when Christ said, he said, I can bring down a whole army of angels. But he didn't, but he could. If he would wanted them, he could have done it. And in the account with Elisha and his servants, angels are the spirit beings that are typically invisible to people unless something supernatural manifested it. Let's turn to Numbers 22. We're back pretty close there in Kings. Let's turn to Numbers 22. And I'm going to read this whole chapter. You got to read a whole chapter to get the story here. 22 verse 1. Then the children of Israel moved and camped in the plains of Moab, on the side of the Jordan across from Jericho. Now Balak, the son of, I think it's Zippor, is that how you pronounce that? He saw all that Israel had done to the Amorites. And Moab was exceedingly afraid of the people because they were many, and Moab was sick with dread. He was afraid of them because of the children of Israel. Moab said to the elders of Midian, "Now this company will lick up everything around us as an ox licks up grass of the field." And Balak, the son of Zippor, was king of the Moabites at that time. He was afraid when all them Israelites moved in. Then he sent messengers to Balaam, the son of Beor, at Pethor, which is near the river in the land of the sons of the people, to call him, saying, "Look, a people has come from Egypt. See, they cover the face of the earth." Boy, it must have been a lot of people. "Cover the face of the earth and are sitting next to me. Therefore, please come at once. Curse these people for me, for they are too mighty for me. Perhaps I shall be able to defeat them and drive them out of the land, for I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed." So the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed with the diviner's fee in their hand, and they came to Balaam and spoke to him the words of Balak. And he said to them, "Lodge here tonight, spend a night here, and I will bring back word to you as the Lord speaks to me. So the princess of Moab stayed with Balaam all night. Then God came to Balaam and said, "Who are these men with you?" So Balaam said to God, "Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab, has sent to me, saying, 'Look, people has come out of Egypt, and they come from the face of the earth. They cover the face of the earth. Come now, curse them for me.'" He must really want that guy bad, doesn't he? To come and curse him, fight him. And God said to Balaam, "You shall not go with them. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed." So Balaam rose in the morning and said to the prince of Balak, "Go back to your land, for the Lord has refused to give me permission to go with you." And the princes of Moab rose and they went back to Balak and said, "Balaam refuses to come with us." Then Balak again sent princes more numerous and more honorable than they. And they came to Balaam and said to him, "Thus says Balak, the son of Zippor, please let nothing hinder you from coming to me." He's begging now. "For I will certainly honor you greatly, and I will do whatever you say to me. Therefore, please come, curse these people for me." And Balaam answered and said to the servants of Balak, you know, he wanted them to stay there all night too and see what God's going to tell him. And God came to Balaam, verse 20. God came to Balaam at night and said to him, "If the men come to you and call on you, rise and go with them. But only the word which I speak to you, that you shall do." So Balaam rose in the morning, saddled up his donkey, and went with the prince of Moab. And God got angry. God's anger was aroused because he went. And the angel of the Lord took his stand in the way as an adversary against him, and he was riding on the donkey, and his two servants were with him. Now here's where I like the story. Now the donkey saw an angel, saw the angel of the Lord standing in his way. And the angel had a sword in his hand. And he turned aside, the donkey turned aside out of the way and went into a field. So Balaam struck that donkey and turned him back onto the road. Then the angel of the Lord stood in a narrow path between the vineyards, with a wall on this side and a wall on that side. So the donkey couldn't go anywhere. He had to go straight. But the angel wouldn't allow it. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she pushed herself against the wall and crushed Balaam's foot against the wall. So he struck her again. He's beating that little donkey. Then the angel of the Lord went further and stood in that narrow place where there was no way to turn either to the right or to the left. And when the donkey saw that angel, she laid down under him. The donkey saw the angel. Balaam didn't see the angel. The donkey did. And guess what? The donkey talked to Balaam. Not donkey talk, because you wouldn't understand. The donkey talked to Balaam. Then the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey and she said to Balaam, "What have I done to you that you have struck me these three times?" And Balaam said, you know, now me, I probably would have fainted if a donkey talked to me. Balaam said to the donkey, "Because you have abused me. I wish there was a sword in my hand. Instead of whatever he had, he was beating that donkey with, he would have took the sword and killed the donkey." So the donkey said to Balaam, "Am I not your donkey on which you have ridden? Ever since I became yours to this day, was I ever disposed to do this to you?" And he said, "No." Talking to a donkey. Then the Lord opened Balaam's eyes. Oh, here we go. The Lord opened Balaam's eyes, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand. And he bowed his head and he fell flat to his face. He saw the angel. And the angel of the Lord said to him, "Why have you struck your donkey these three times? Behold, I have come out to stand against you because your way is perverse before me." The donkey saw me and turned aside from me. These three times, if she had not turned aside from me, surely I would have also killed you. And it displeased you. I will turn back. Then the angel of the Lord said to Balaam, "Go with the men. Go ahead, go with the men. But only the word that I speak to you, that you shall speak." So Balaam went with the princes of Balak. Now when Balak heard that Balaam was coming, he sent out to meet him at the city of Moab, which on the border at the Arnon, the boundary of the territory. Now I'm not going to go any further there, but it just shows that there was a really, really severe reason for God to open up Balaam's eyes so he could see what was going on in front of him and see why that donkey wouldn't go. And he did. He opened his eyes and he saw the angel. So this story shows that angels do appear if God allows it. Only if God allows it to happen. Like in verse 27, you know, the donkey saw the angel and Balaam didn't. Verse 31, then God opened up Balaam's eyes and he saw the angel. Do you remember when angels visited the biblical patriarch Abraham and then moved on to bring judgment on the depraved city of Sodom? And encountering Abraham's righteous nephew, Lot. Now, that's another long story. I'm not going to do all that one, though. But Lot was living there in Sodom. So here we see that Abraham initially did not recognize his divine visitors. He thought they were men when they were angels. And he didn't know who or what they really were. If we go back to Genesis 18, let's go there, Genesis 18. We're going to read verse 1 through 8. If I don't drink a little water, the guy that brings it up won't bring it up anymore. Genesis 18, verse 1. Then the Lord appeared to him by the terebinth trees of Mamre, as he was sitting in a tent door in the heat of the day. So he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, three men were standing by him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed down in himself to the ground and said, "My Lord, if I have now found favor in your sight, do not pass on by your servant. Please let a little water be brought to wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. And I will bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh your hearts. After that, you may pass by, and as much as you have come to your servant, they said, do as you have said. Now, does angels, do they eat? Do they have to eat? Angels, with God's help, can do anything they want to. I'm going to finish this up. So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah and said, quickly make ready 3 measures of fine meal, knead it, and make cakes. And Abraham ran to the herd, took a tender and good calf, gave it to the young man, and he hastened to prepare it. So he took butter and milk and the calf which he had prepared and set it before them. And he stood by them under the tree as they ate. So these angels did eat. I want to go ahead and read Genesis 19, verse 1 through 3. Genesis 19, verse 1 says, now the two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. And he said, hear now, my lords, please turn into your servant's house and spend the night. But they didn't want to. They just wanted to stay out. Sometimes I like to sleep out under the stars. I'm getting too old for that now. But anyway, verse 3, but he insisted strongly, so they turned in to him and entered his house. Then he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread. And again, they did eat. So we see that both angels here looked like men. They look like men. The third angel also looked like a man, but was Christ, who later would be born human flesh. They even ate the meals that Abraham and Lot prepared for them, which showed they were manifested in physical form at that time. So maybe, just maybe, you have met angels and didn't know it. You may have met angels and didn't know it. And maybe certain strangers have helped you in some way, especially since they can appear as normal-looking people. And in Hebrews 13, verse 2, I'm not going to turn there at Hebrews 13, verse 2. Talks about that stranger that you might have met that might have been an angel and you didn't know. So I got wrote down here, of course, we need to be careful of strangers. We need to meet them and treat them the way we would like to be treated ourselves. But be careful. So even though angels can appear as normal men, they are far, far from normal, as we understand what normal is. Angels are in reality powerful, glorious beings. I would like to turn back to Daniel 10. Daniel 10, I'm going to read verse 5 and 6. Daniel 10, verse 5. I lifted my eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose waist was girded with gold of Uphaz. This is a gold that is in it's fine gold in a certain place where they find gold, and I'm not sure just where that is. His body was like a burro, his face like the appearance of lightning, his eyes like torches of fire, his arms and feet like burnished bronze in color, and the sound of his words like the voice of a multitude. If you noticed where it says in Daniel, he called the angel a man in verse 5. All these scriptures where angels were seen as men tell us that angels must be maybe the size of a man. Men are different heights and different sizes. Angels must be that way. So, brethren, do angels appear in human form? That's the question, and that's the topic. Do angels appear in human form? They can. We've proven that in the Bible. They can. And can we see them? Maybe. You ever see that commercial? Little boy holds up something and says, "Is this a lug wrench?" Maybe. Anyway, it depends on the will of God if you see them or not. So, brethren, be careful. You may be entertaining an angel and not know it.